Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 40 of the Nerd Cantina Show. In today's episode, we're going to cover the weekly news, starting with, of course, talk about the Joker and our spoiler-free thoughts on that. We've got Martin Scorsese throwing a little bit of hate at comic book movies. Court of Appeals has ruled on net neutrality. NASA is almost ready to announce that there's life on Mars. And then some talk about the new cross-platform between PlayStation Network and Xbox. Big week, a lot of topics. Let's get started.
Calling back all nerds. Nerds!
All right, episode 40 of the Nerd Cantina Show. Big week in movies in the sense that I know we've been talking about the Joker for months. And Steve, you saw it and left your YouTube review and a written review. So for those who are literate, Steve wrote a review on the Nerd Cantina. For those of you who are not, YouTube has got you covered. The Nerd Cantina's got you covered there as well. And Steve, your thoughts?
Well, you got to check out the YouTube video anyways, just because I have some of the dopest Joker gear that I wore to the theater. And I think all nerds can appreciate my hoodie and t-shirt that I rocked that day. As far as the movie, from fan reactions, I've been getting into arguments all weekend. Basically, either you loved it or you hated it, man. So a lot of people did not like it. Again, I chalk this up to the people that don't like to think when they go into a theater and don't like to have their brain on. They just want to go in, sit in the comfy recliner chair, shovel chocolate and popcorn into their face and walk out with no feels. So if you're that type of person, you probably didn't enjoy the Joker as much. It was a really dark and heavy, like, mirror shined up to society. And if you appreciate the nuance of, like, a comic book story being told with that kind of depth and reality, then it was stellar. Like, I was amazed.
Yeah, so I don't know if I've left a movie more, I guess, uncertain on how I felt about the movie.
Did you get to go see it?
Oh, did I not tell you?
No, you did. Like, as of yesterday, you were like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to get to go.
And then I went really late last night and I'm exhausted this morning.
Awesome. And, all right.
And made it out to the movie because I didn't want to get to this point and not have my thoughts. And honestly, I left the movie. And like I said, I've never been less certain about how much I enjoyed a movie or didn't enjoy it. And it really is a movie you have to kind of reflect on. And the more and more I reflect on it, like, I appreciate the way it went. When you see it, there's so much to interpret. There's so much that you can come away thinking and have theories about the movie that it's interesting, that aspect. It is phenomenal acting. There's really not a scene that Joaquin Phoenix isn't in that movie. And he's pouring everything he can into this role. I mean, it is absolutely phenomenal acting. It portrays exactly, I think, what Todd Phillips was attempting to go for there. And I think some of it's really great. For those who want to complain that the pacing is a bit slow, yeah, you're right. I mean, it is.
So my defense of that has always been, like, slow does not mean boring.
So I think
that's what everybody attributes. Like, when you say, well, it's a little slow, you know, and people are like, oh, so I'm going to be bored for the first hour and a half. Fuck no, you're not going to be bored. You're going to get sucked in to this man's life. And they just do it in a, you know, like, there's no bang, bang, like, scenes. Like, it's just,
yeah,
you really
it just comes down to, is the slow, yes, the slow development of the character, it is not boring. There is always something happening. At the same time, there's really nothing happening in the movie, right? So it does keep you interested. Does it need to be so much? Does it, like, do we have an idea of this character and things way sooner than, like, that's where the pacing kind of gets. So yes, everything is interesting. And it does keep you kind of, hey, waiting, like, all right, what is this building to? Where are we going? And it kind of keeps you there. And it's a really long build. And not all of it is, I think, necessary. It's just...
Well, I think that the way they told it did a really good job. So when you watch superhero movies, there's always this, like, gloss of imagination. Even if they try to make it like a more reality-based superhero movie, you know, like Winter Soldier didn't have, like, a bunch of outlandish shit that you couldn't believe. It kind of played out to be like a Bourne Identity Marvel movie, you know, and they tried to keep a big portion of reality in there. This movie doesn't want that gloss. They want it to be as realistic and gritty as your everyday society is. And I think that if you rush into some of the topics and some of the situations that he's put in, you don't feel that reality sink into you. You know what I mean? Like, you, if you rush into some of the things and the themes that they deal with in this movie, I don't think you're weighted down with the, severity of these issues as much as if you just kind of like gloss over some of the things and hurry up and get to the meat and potatoes, you know?
Yeah. I mean, is 60 minutes not enough time? It was 90 minutes necessary. You know, there is criticism to be had. There's some people just aren't going to like it. In the end, I walked away from it initially kind of like in silence, walking out of the movie, just thinking to myself, all right, how much did I like the movie? I did enjoy it. And I found it, I found it gripping throughout.
That's my frustration, is a lot of people, you know, are just quick to be like, fucking sucked, man, like shitty movie. And it's like, look, okay, if you didn't like it, that's fine. But there is nobody that should have the opinion that this was a bad movie or the movie was shitty, or like just say flat out, I don't enjoy these types of movies. I'm more of this fan, and it was more of this kind of movie. I'm not a big fan of these kinds of movies. Like, at least have some kind of, I don't know if it, respect is the good word for it, but there's no instance where you should have left the theater and been like, oh, I totally fucking wasted my night. Like, no, you may not have enjoyed it, but at least appreciate, you know, what was put on the screen there.
And I watched a couple different like interviews with like Joaquin Phoenix over the last couple of weeks as he's doing his press circuit. And you don't normally hear from Joaquin Phoenix, right? If he's not forced by contract to be on a press circuit, dude is a ghost, and nobody sees him anywhere. And he did some good interviews. He did the Nerdist the ID10T podcast with Chris Hardwick. Used to be the Nerdist podcast, and he did that. It was, you know, an hour of Joaquin Phoenix, and he's pretty kind of transparent about these things and talking about how this, but a lot of people aren't going to like this movie. And that's one of the favorite things that he liked about the movie, is that it really is open up for a lot of artistic interpretation. People can really look at this movie as a societal piece talking about inequality and the challenges of society. It could be a mental health piece. It could just be a comic book movie. It could be whatever the fuck you feel like getting out of it.
Yeah. Joker's history is very convoluted in that sense also. So if you go to any Joker origin story throughout comics and like wherever, you never get to really put your finger on it. You know, there is no definitive, you know, like when they came out with Logan for Wolverine's origin, because Wolverine didn't have an origin for so long and everybody wanted to know, they put like a definitive origin on him. The Joker has always been, like, it could be one of many things. Even in the Dark Knight, because I rewatched the Dark Knight the day after, because my girlfriend had never seen Heath Ledger's rendition of Joker, so I wanted to show her that. And even in his rendition, when he tells about how he got his scars, he tells three different stories throughout that movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So even in that rendition of Joker, they kept his origin very, you know, mysterious. And so, like, I just think that, yeah, if you really just like were like, this movie sucks, you really just don't know shit about comics and about film. Like, sorry about it. Like, if your feelings are hurt, fuck you. Like, these people put a lot of effort and a lot of, you know, their soul into this movie. And if you didn't like it, that's fine. But to say it was a shit movie, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, I think anything that's overly critical is unfair, just because it was done really well. But yeah, you could just not like this type of movie. You could not like,
yeah, and that's totally fine. I'm totally fine with that.
And not like the pacing of the movie. I think there is a valid complaint to be had on maybe this one pushed the boundary too far on how far to kind of chronicle this journey, or how deep to go to it, because it there were even moments where I was kind of like, all right, is this finally going to be the one that, is this finally going to be the instance that we start to shape
think,
the character?
I think that's or what they the wanted to do because everybody knows where the movie's going to kind of lead to. So like something shitty happens, you're like, oh, dude's about to snap. And then he doesn't snap and you got to go another 15 minutes. And you're just thinking to yourself, like another shitty thing is going to happen to this dude. Well, like this poor motherfucker.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we can talk later.
Go check out the reviews. Go to YouTube. Check out the written review on thenerdcantina.com. Another portion we wanted to talk about a little bit about the Joker, though, we want to make sure we have some time for it, is the way society reacted before the film even released, which was hysterical almost.
Well, yeah, I mean, many people don't think it's hysterical, right? So you've got theaters all across the country ramping up security. We had, you found the article of the theater up in Huntington Beach near LA that closed due to what they thought were credible threats. And even to the point that the FBI had to release a bulletin stating that there has been a high volume of online threats or online discussions regarding shootings going into theaters.
I mean, I had an armed guard in my theater walking in and out, which I found very unsettling. So I don't know if the blatherings of the dumbasses of our society are more unsettling, or the fact that I have to go to a movie and see a dude in a bulletproof vest and a gun walking the hall when I go do it. Like, I don't know which I'm more disturbed by.
Yeah, and whether any of this is even needed or reasonable, I don't know. Yeah, there's probably all kinds of there were probably people online saying dumb shit. I don't know if there's ever a time that people aren't online saying dumb shit. I don't know.
Before
a John Wick movie, if there aren't people talking about going out and John Wicking motherfuckers.
Yeah, like, are we supposed to bow to every online crazy that has something to say? Like, are we supposed to readjust? Like, so there was a story of a man in New York, anytime there was a murder on screen, was just like Joker laughing at the murders, like loud in the theater. And a few people said something and people got up to leave because they were afraid this dude was going to shoot up the theater. And he started spitting on the people as they were leaving. And like instantly, of course, I form an opinion the minute I read that. And I was telling my girlfriend, I was like, man, I would have fucked that dude up. Like I would have been going to jail that day because I would have fucked that dude up, whether he spit on me or not. Like I'm having it out with that dude. She's like, no, you can't even say stuff to people like that anymore because you don't know if he has a gun and you don't know if he's going to kill you. And I just have the opinion of,
you never knew if the dude had a gun. Yeah. There's nothing different about today.
Well, and to me, I'm not going to live my life like that. You know, I think we've hit this point because there are so many, I don't want to say cowards or cowardly, but it is, we have hit a point where the good crazy people like myself that don't give a fuck and will go upside your fucking head for being a dummy in the middle of public, because jail don't scare me either, we're dwindling. There aren't enough people like me to, whereas back in the day, society was filled with guys like me that have no problem doing bad things in the name of good. And now you have, you know, all these people that they can't be bothered with their time for it. They don't want to cause a stir. They have the fear of what the media has put in our head about, you know, crazy people and things like that. And I think that we have a whole generation of fucked up people now that don't have any fear of society. There was a day where if you said something fucked up, you would get your ass whooped and the cops wouldn't arrest the dude that fucked you up because you deserved it. And it was kind of like street justice. Street justice is gone the way of the dodo. And now we have just a whole army of crazies that have free reign to do whatever they want because there's not enough people like me out there that will put a knot on your fucking forehead if you act like a goddamn dummy around me and my family.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can go ahead and act like, you know, you're Batman committing vigilante justice here or whatever else, but
I'm not gonna say I'm Batman. Like, I'm not gonna go that far. I'm not looking for these instances, but if life puts me in the situation where I have that dummy next to me, he done fucked up. Like, sorry, Bob, bro, you picked the wrong motherfucking day.
What if that dummy is suffering from mental illness, and you go ahead and you joker him?
Man, sorry about it. Sorry about it, society. I was just trying to do my part.
I just think that there's such, you know, we're at this point where we have to overreact to everything. This concept of, you know, like the theater shootings, whether there was credible threats, there really weren't. Some of these theaters claimed credible threats, but even ones that had no threats whatsoever are stepping up security. They're doing other things. You know, you have other theater companies like banning all, you know, costumes and stuff like that going into the movie. And
I'm just, we're so not a sick,
more violent society. Yeah,
I'm so sick of playing to the lowest common denominator. Like, we are altering millions of people's lives off the actions of dozens or hundreds of people's, you know what I mean? Like, we are constantly conforming our society to the lowest common denominator. And I'm just so sick of it, especially in situations like this. Like, I can't even go see a fucking movie.
Yeah, I didn't. I mean, I went on a Sunday night, late as hell show. There was literally two other people in the theater, so I think I was safe. But there's just, I don't know. I don't like pretending that we're living in a more violent society than what's true. While mass shootings and everything else are significant to those who experience it, that percentage is still extremely low. Overall crime is not where it once was. Violent crime is not where it once was. I think we overestimate
the amount of people that actually have the balls to pull a trigger, because I've been in life situations where I can honestly tell you that not many people have the goddamn balls, and if you pull something, you better kill me, motherfucker. I'll tell you right now.
And the people don't, it's not even a matter of having balls. There's just not that many people who have the intent, who have the concept to go and sacrifice themselves to commit these acts. There aren't that many people.
The stories you see on the media are not the average. They're the anomaly. You know, we publicize the anomalies of our society, and people think they're the norms.
Maybe it brought certain level of peace of mind to some individuals to see the armed guards or whatever else. But in the end, I don't gain any value in that. I think it's actually worse that it continues to cycle everybody's paranoia. It continues to, you know, make this now the norm that individuals are going to start to have to expect or see.
Well,
the more armed guards that we see in and around society tends to make our children think that this is necessary for their own safety.
We have a whole generation growing up where this is normal, and it will eventually become normal because of that. I remember after the Boston Marathon bombing, I ran a marathon that year, and just the amount of AR-15s and SWAT tanks and shit all over a marathon. It's like, God damn, man. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm just trying to go for a run here. I'm trying to do a life accomplishment. And I feel like, you know, I'm in a goddamn war zone. And I just, to me, the more authority we put in situations like this, when you're looking, you know, you're taking all these armed people in security, and you're putting them in a situation where they're looking for something to stop. They're looking for something out of the norm. If you look hard enough, you're always going to find something. And my big tattooed ass is probably end up going to be falling into that realm someday where I'm not doing anything wrong, you know, and I come off, I'm an intimidating person at times. You know, I've been told that quite often. I'm 6'3", 230 pounds, tattooed sleeves, hand tattoos. So I don't want to, the more people we put in a situation where they're looking for fucked up shit to happen, the more likely my life gets swept up into it some way. And, you know, I get to be a part of that collateral damage.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, I struggle to articulate really my thoughts on this, because it's not a matter of, you know, I recognize the significance of these events, but But I also recognize the true challenges of actually defeating it through, you know, what, security guards at a movie theater and stuff like that. It's just such a, it's a, such a false sense that that's actually going to accomplish anything. But what it does is it just changes societal norms into thinking that we really are this significantly dangerous society. And I don't really care to have my kids grow up in an environment where they think that these armed guards are necessary, because they're not. And they're actually not going to provide that security that you think they do.
I really, truly, in my opinion, believe that in order to curb this or stop this, we need to get away from the see something, say something society and get to the see something, do something society.
Well, that's a different debate. Well, not going to go down the good guys with guns mentality.
We've tackled this topic long enough. I think people definitely have some opinions on everything we talked about here. So let's go over to another subject.
We've talked a lot about Joker, but one thing that, you know, it's kind of, in our opinion, a little bit Joker adjacent here is, you know, you've got Martin Scorsese this last week talking about how really he just hates comic book movies. Yeah. and it's not even that he hates them, right? He's so indifferent about them, he refuses to see them. And like his specific quote is that, "I don't see them. I tried, you know, but that's not cinema. Honestly, the closest I can think of them, as well made as they are, with actors doing the best they can under the circumstances, is theme parks. It isn't the cinema of human beings trying to convey emotional, psychological experiences to another human being." So, I mean, that's pretty scathing in the sense of you've got a lot of people pouring their life's work, and then you have one of the greatest filmmakers of all time essentially telling them that your life's work in this regard is just meaningless carnival rides.
To me, this sounds like the updated version of like playwrights when movies first came out, you know what I mean? Like, so all the theater people that put on Shakespeare and yeah, theater the minute film came on, just shitting on that, being like, "Oh, you get 15 tries to get the scene right, we do it in one try on the stage, you ape." You know, so to me this is just the updated version of Scorsese being an old fuddy-duddy trying to hate on you know, what society finds. Like, I mean, in some aspects he does kind of have a point. Like, yeah, I mean, some of these movies are not meant to move you in any way. They're not, you know, it's entertainment. Are you entertained? Yeah. That's the goal of movies. And some movies in its way of entertaining tries to move you, convey a message, reflect harsh realities that we live in. Other movies just want to take you away from that shit for a couple hours so you can act. It's a form of meditation. Like, hey, shut your brain off. Like, don't worry about what's going on in the walls around you. Here's some fun shit to look at for a couple hours.
Yeah. I think it's significant in the sense that, I mean, yeah, I get it. Scorsese is an old man. He's like 77 years old. He's shitting on a lot of people's work and essentially saying that everybody who enjoys it as, you know, these moviegoers are you know, we're just thrill seekers, not necessarily, you
know, film. Fucking boy De Niro was just in The Joker.
I know.
His boy is fucking number one actor. He's been in damn near every movie he's ever fucking made, just made a comic book movie.
I think maybe this is a little bit of Martin Scorsese being a little upset that, like, you know, one of his newest things with Pesci and De Niro is a straight to Netflix, right? Can't get to the theater because it wasn't going to be profitable. They didn't think it was going to sell enough tickets. So it's going, you know, The Irishman looks great.
Yeah, I'm going to try to see it in a theater. I'm hoping they release it somewhere around me.
You know, it's going to Netflix, and, you know, well,
it's going to be in theaters
cinema
too. It's going to be in like select
limited run.
Yeah, limited run. You know, so if you are a movie guy like I am, you'll have your chance too. But
so if you're an old head in you know, and you're talking about cinema, not movies, right? You're talking about cinema, in the great days of cinema, and he's looking at it from the perspective of, hey, you know, he used to sell these tickets, and now you get these billion-dollar superhero movies, and meanwhile, his movies are straight to Netflix.
Part of his hobbies are he hides in the back of LA theaters and makes the old reel sound like he's just in the back corner making the noise for everybody as the fucking film goes.
I think it's unfair. James Gunn and other people have chimed in. Essentially,
Samuel Jackson had something to say about it.
But it's a bit ridiculous that he doesn't even watch the movies, but he's going to say that they don't have an emotional appeal or a psychological appeal. It's like, no, I mean,
the Joker totally disproves that theory. Yeah. Like he definitely gave that quote out at the wrong, on the wrong fucking weekend. Cause the Joker just shit all over that. And I'm sorry, man, if you didn't cry at Spider-Man at the end of Infinity War, you're not a fucking human, bro. like you're a fucking savage, and I'm not sitting next to you on the bus either.
All right, well, now let's move away from the Joker and talk about something else that's probably going to spark a little bit of discussion between us, and that is the rulings around net neutrality.
Yeah, this is just how our government does not work in the favor of consumers that often, and is now pivoting to ISP providers so that they can ravage what used to be a free internet. It's kind of like, the internet was one of those nice hippie communes for a long time. Just come on in and contribute, man. Take what you need, give what you got, like fucking internet, bro. and now the government's like, oh no, y'all ain't paying taxes, like we need all kinds of stuff. Like, no, this is horrible. This is really bad.
The Court of Appeals does one of two things, right? So it allows the repeal of net neutrality, which it upheld the decision, the 2018 order that got rid of net neutrality. So the FCC is no longer in the business of net neutrality, which means that the internet service providers can modify, can control bandwidth, can limit bandwidth, can do a lot of things. With regards of how they provide internet. But what this also does is the Court of Appeals specifically states that, yes, they're allowing the repeal, right? It's a Court of Appeals. They don't necessarily have the choice. The FCC says they no longer want to be in the game of limiting or oversight over broadband companies. The Court of Appeals didn't have really a place to force the FCC to continue its regulatory body. So what it did do, though, because that in the order for net neutrality, when they repealed it, they tried to repeal it also stating that no states can also make any laws regarding net neutrality. The Court of Appeals stated that, okay, FCC, if federally you want to get out of the business of regulating internet service providers, fine. But they also stated that you cannot stop states from providing net neutrality agreements. So the state of California already has a net neutrality agreement. Washington State, I think, already has one. And you're going to start to see all 50 states roll out net neutrality deals, which is effectively going to keep net neutrality alive because they cannot stop it.
And I think this is going to be a trend, and we're going to see a lot of states' rights people starting to get pissed and fight this, because essentially I think they're trying to stop what California did with car emissions. So California passed strict car emission laws, and because California is the biggest buyer of cars in the United States, car companies weren't going to make cars that could pass in California, and then other cars that would pass everywhere else, they would just have to make all their cars pass for California, and everybody else would be driving California emission standard cars. So I think the federal government is trying to stop large states that from having like an overreach of national implications.
Yeah, I mean, there is federal movement towards that, in the sense that states' rights should not drive federal policies, in their opinion, and California being so strong with a lot of like these environmental things. Yes, it does become a play there.
Well, and net neutrality, this is nothing new. Texas has been doing it forever. So there's a Texas school board with six people on it that literally determine everything that goes into your children's textbooks. So Texas buys the most school books out of any state. So six people on the Texas school board determine what goes into to Texas school books, and whatever they determine is the book that gets made. And like the cars, these school book companies aren't going to make books just for Texas and books for the rest of the country. They just make books. So literally for decades, you've had six mouth breathers in Texas determine what goes into your biology books, what goes into your history books. And this is like something that no one really knows either, you know, but people, states have been doing this positively or negatively for a long time.
Yeah, I think this net neutrality thing's a bit different. Yes, maybe it's the same in the sense of that the FCC was trying to initially bar states from making any net neutrality laws. In the end, I don't know. I find a hard time looking at net neutrality and thinking, like, playing the devil's advocate of how net neutrality or the repeal of net neutrality benefits the average person or consumers. Net neutrality was supported by greater than 80% of the American public, and then it gets repealed. We're all 80% of us screwed up and wanting net neutrality? Or is this purely a corporate play? I tend to believe that this is purely just some just really where the government fails the people.
Oh yeah, this, I mean, everybody can see the writing on the wall. Everybody knows that if you give these ISP providers who own stock in creator companies, you know, so if you own Hulu stock, you slow down Netflix. If you own, you know, Disney Plus stock, you slow down everybody else. If you have, you know, Viacom stock or general, the cereal maker, you speed up other people's websites, you slow down their competition. Like, there is huge ethical ramifications that come from this.
Yeah, and you also have streaming services owned by broadband companies. So, you know, you got Comcast owning NBC, and they're going to have their own service, and then them throttling it. And then it also, you know, how, as an independent website, right, does the new YouTube get made under the repeal of net neutrality? No, because YouTube's going to pay to just crush them and ensure that they never get bandwidth that allows them to buffer or play quality, you know, videos. And then in the end, the websites die.
Yeah.
There's nothing good for the consumers. So, but
it stifles innovation. It stifles, progress in any form.
I'm glad that the Court of Appeals was smart enough in the way that they wrote. Again, the Court of Appeals didn't have the legal grounds to force the FCC to keep with net neutrality. But they definitely created the back door for all states to then to come up with net neutrality laws that mimic what was already in existence. The problem is the FCC was in the best position to enforce it. When you put it down to the states, well, now there's going to have to be individual state lawsuits against individual companies.
Yeah, but they banned the states from making any laws. So now the states are going to have to sue. It's just going to be this long, drawn out court thing. It's going to end up going all the way to Supreme Court until our government actually passes a law that says it almost needs to be an amendment. We almost need it in our Constitution that says information cannot be withheld by private parties. You know what I mean? Like, information should be free to all, especially in this day and age of the internet. And to me, if guns are a human right, then so is information.
Yeah, it just comes down to, you know, the information is still going to be there. I don't know whether you're going to, I don't think this is ever going to make it into some level of amendment or whatever else. But I think right now net neutrality still is somewhat safe in the hands of states. If you want net neutrality in your state, because many of them don't have it yet, there's still room for that to be had until this makes it to the Supreme Court, and maybe the Supreme Court makes a different decision. But as of right now, states can still practice.
Yeah, like we said, I don't think the courts can. Their hands are kind of tied at this. This is going to be a congressional thing eventually. It that's the only way it's going to actually ever get protected. Moving away from entertainment, we do have some science topics to talk about in the form of outer space. Again, we do love our outer space. You want to drop a little bit of the NASA knowledge?
So NASA they announced this week, it's kind of a weird announcement, that they announced that they have potential future announcements in the sense that they're almost ready to talk about the discovery of life in space, specifically life on Mars, with what the Mars rovers have kind of recently come across.
So they found like stones that are only prevalent in like lake beds. So they're cutting open stones and they're doing things with the Mars rover now, and they're finding that there's evidence of ancient lake beds. So with the information they've released, because they still have to release a little bit more, there might be some more details. But from what we know now, is their assumption is, you know, even here on Earth, when there's toxic water with nuclear waste and all kinds of shit, as long as there's water, there's some kind of life form that thrives there. The depths of the ocean with all that huge pressure on it and everything, life still thrives. So their mindset is wherever there is water, there is life. Life will thrive. And we are starting to find more and more evidence of that water on Mars. So further than that, I don't know if they have any more evidence, if it's just like, oh, well, we found water, so there's got to be something growing there. I think they're going to release more details than that, but that's kind of what we know right now.
Yeah, and they say they're, you know, almost ready to announce. So I'm really curious. Maybe they've got a trick up their sleeve here. They got a rabbit to pull out of a hat as far as some major thing that people aren't seeing. But I think it's still more of the same, of just looking for the existence of water, and then maybe they'll find some, you know, fossilized evidence or something that they can actually show that there was a live structure of something at some point in time. But we will definitely be paying attention and let the audience know if NASA makes that announcement here in the near future.
And you have some moon news?
So it's just interesting that so China's been doing that exploration with their lander on the dark side of the moon. And they've been doing this for a couple months now. And they successfully let cotton grow on the moon. It was still in a chamber that they had, which had kind of a simulated atmosphere. But there's still challenges even in like a chamber on the surface of the moon, dealing with, you know, radiation from space, the temperatures that exist in space. And they were just trying to probably test whether you can, you know, create like biodome essentially on the moon. And they tried 6 different species of plants. But they did get cotton. So cotton actually did grow from a seed to a leafing plant, and then it died in one lunar day cycle, which is 2 weeks time. But for two weeks on Earth, there was plants that grew from seed to at least a green leafy plant, green leafy leaves above the surface.
Why do I have this feeling like every black astronaut now is going like, I ain't going. Like, fool me once, motherfuckers. I ain't going. Like, send me to Mars. You can do like, I ain't going to the moon.
Not touching that. next topic.
So I'm big into evolutionary science. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I find it fascinating that in our body, in our instincts, in our mannerisms, we still have remnants from thousands and tens of thousands, even millions of years ago that we just can't shake off as humans. And they released on BBC News that scientists have been scanning the muscles of the hand in 12-week-old gestation fetuses, and finding that there are lizard muscles in the hands of us before we're born that we actually lose during the embryonic period. So you start off with lizard-like hands in the embryo, but by the time you're born, most of those muscles are gone. They don't know why they leave before birth. They don't understand it necessarily, but because of these scans, they can tie a lot of these muscles to lizard remnants from, I want to say they said like 25 million years ago. You know, so they think that's partly why we have thumb dexterity. A lot of those muscles do remain in our thumb, and that's why we have dexterous thumbs. They don't know why we lose them in our other 4 digits. But to me, I just find this stuff so fascinating that we are able to kind of track these evolutionary markers and realize that, to me, the evolutionary science is the thing that reminds us that we all aren't so different. In a day and age in society where we all want to claim how different we are from one another and make all these societal changes because of of how different we are. I love these constant reminders that say, "Nah, motherfuckers, we're all the same. We're all the same. No matter how special of a snowflake you feel like, we're all the same."
It's really cool. I don't know what, you know, maybe there'll be some more research into it to really kind of hone into where the benefits are or whatever else, but you know, maybe we got some kind of shared ancestry to lizards. Who knows is this all more of the sign that, hey, we all just kind of have the same building blocks and, you know, specialization ends up having us come out the womb a bit different, there's always kind of these same remnants from across species.
Yeah. Maybe it helps us understand more about selection and why we lose these things and what were the drivers to bring us here. The more we understand about ourselves and the more we understand about history and things like that, I don't think you're worse off for it. Some of it doesn't matter. Some of it's just cool little party, you know, cocktail party knowledge. Others times we discover stuff like this and it really kind of opens the door on our capabilities and things like that. So I'm always excited when we get little tidbits of information like this.
That article, the scientist who's a part of that like research team just talks about how it's really interesting to still be finding out new things that we didn't know about human development before, right? That, you know, if we didn't know this, that we didn't know that these muscles kind of rapidly appear and then disappear, what else are we missing? What else do we not understand about human development? And it's kind of a cool thing. I think
you're the egg's fertilized and it goes through this process of like, am I a chameleon or am I a human? Oh no, I'm human. Okay. And you dip off a few of those, digit muscles. I think this stuff is fascinating, you know, and I think it just reminds us that, you know, we are, you know, it goes back to our free will conversation, but we are not as in control of our faculties and our bodies as we'd like to imagine. So much of what makes us are remnants from millions of years ago, thousands of years of evolution, you know, survival. Like people, you know, we've come so far as humans in the last 100-200 years that we forget that we spent 100,000 years in a fucking cave throwing rocks at animals to survive. You know, to me, I love that stuff.
All right. Well, we'll move to
a little bit of tech news. I guess,
we'll kind of jump really from there to some talk around some gaming in the sense of, hey, we've got PS4 now fully supporting cross-platform play. And it's kind of, you know, really interesting timing as they're probably trying to kill Google Stadia and ensure that Xbox and PlayStation teaming up again.
To me, it's just them again fighting the current wave. So PlayStation wasn't the OG in video gaming. They kind of took the crown from Nintendo back in the day. You know, and I think this is them really kind of like fighting an evolution in video games again, you know. So they were against cross-platform and then Nintendo and Xbox worked out a deal and now PlayStation's finally like, all right, guys, like, I guess it is the future. We'll play along. So they're going to play along. They botched their gaming subscription and Game Pass for Xbox is hugely successful. So they had to revamp that and repackage it and drop the price now to get everybody to buy the PS Now or whatever it's called. And now you have them caving on cross-platform, but at the same time they're caving on cross-platform, they're also shooting shots across the bow at cloud gaming a month before Stadia releases and could possibly revolutionize video games, you know, for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I think that's a part of it, right? Nintendo and Xbox were already working towards cross-platform. Microsoft owning, you know, obviously PC and Xbox, that was an easy jump for them. And PlayStation really just saw the writing on the wall that they needed to get into this before everybody just starts to go away. And their consumer base just disappears. And then, yeah, with it being a month before, you know, as Xbox has released their xCloud gaming system, but then Stadia is going to be purely a console-free, but still a console experience. I think the consoles are going to team up and just try to figure out a way to box them out and ensure that at least the viability of selling these consoles, selling the discs-based games, the downloadable-based games that you have to have is at least viable for a period longer.
That's why I'm really still looking forward to next month when we get our Stadias. I want to see the latency on these things. I want to really try to like get my hands into this cloud gaming and see the bugs that they're going to have to work out, the pros, the cons. But if it's as good as they say it's going to be, $130 gets you in on the ground floor with a lot of shit from Google Stadia. You know what I mean? And the next systems from Xbox and PlayStation are going to be in the $500 range. And that's just for the box to play the game, you know? So like if they hit it out of the park with Stadia, everything's going to change. It's just going to change.
Yeah. Well, we obviously are hoping that's the case as we purchased our way into it to give it a test. And then one light topic to end us off is in tech news, we've got an exoskeleton suit that was fully controlled by somebody's mind. So we've got a paralyzed man who was provided an exoskeleton that he was able to control and manipulate and walk purely through mind control. This is incredibly cool. We talked months ago about like Neuralink from Elon Musk's company for Neuralink, and this is hopefully the future of these things. The full press release for this suit hasn't come out yet. They haven't given great details of everything else, and it's actually older technology. So the implants for this were placed into this individual's brain 2 years ago. Electrodes placed on the brain, and he spent the last 2 years learning how to control a simulated environment on a computer to manipulate the simulated environment. And then once he was able to manipulate the simulated environment, they essentially just took those same data points that he was controlling with his mind and now are applying it to an exoskeleton. So this is some older technology in the sense of how big these sensors were, how few points they had. And with Neuralink, what they released just a couple months ago was essentially in the size of less than a quarter of an inch. They're going to have a significant increase to the amount of electrodes, the amount of brain mapping that can be done.
You know, yeah, and this combines kind of like a few of the stories we talk about on the podcast. You know, Neuralink, Boston Dynamics, we talked about last week with these robots. Like, we're taking all these new technologies, and there's no way that they're not going to merge and intertwine, and one person's breakthrough causes another breakthrough in another field. I'll be really excited to see the days where, like, a Stephen Hawking can have a more, you know, a better life, be woven into society, better than, you know, the way that he had to live his life due to illness, you know. So you're going to have a lot of, paraplegic, quadriplegic people, be able to feel as if they have their faculties back. And a lot of it is, you know, that's the key is like for a lot of handicapped people, they just want to be part of a normal society. And tragically, it is hard for us, you know, to just kind of look at a person in a wheelchair or see a handicapped person and not have a certain level of empathy and compassion that kind of makes those situations awkward. You know what I mean? And doesn't make them feel like they're just a normal part of society. And it's one of those things that are, you know, it's sad, but it's understandable. You know what I mean? When, you know, when I see a blind person, you know, you almost feel guilty being able to see rainbows and the, you know, the world around you, you know, like, and you have that empathy for these people and they, you know, a lot of handicapped people, they don't want you to feel sorry for them. They don't want, you know, they want your understanding and they want to be a part of society. And I think this helps us bridge that gap a lot better.
All right. So I'm more of a shitty human being than you in this regard. I didn't necessarily think so hard on that. One, I just want to see like Luke Skywalker level level of prosthetics. So that way, somewhere down the road, if I lose my arm to a lightsaber battle or whatever it happens to be, that I could have a fully functioning hand. And I also thought, if you could brain map, say, you know, exoskeleton limbs, you could also probably brain map your way to having like Dr. Octopus level control of fucking
external
arms. Oh yeah,
Doc Ock is on his
way. So this is where my brain goes on these things.
Yeah, no,
is,
for sure. I just equated extra to hands. Like, look where we've come with prosthetics. You probably walk past at least one person a day that has no legs, but you can't fucking tell anymore. The prosthetic limbs have gotten to a point where these people are walking normal. They wear pants. You can't tell. They got the gym shoes on. Like, literally, there are people walking by you all the time that have no legs, and you have no fucking clue. And for them, that's the goal, is they just want to be a part of society. And once these exoskeletons get perfected and the neural links and everything like that, to where they can wear them under their clothes and they just get dressed in the morning and they walk out not knowing that this motherfucker's paralyzed from the neck down. You know, like, I think that is just, that is such a great goal for society to have. I'm all for it. Subsidize this industry as much as you want. Take my pennies out of my tax dollars to fund any of this shit, because I truly want to live in that society where the handicapped are just interwoven into our society with no notice whatsoever.
I don't think that this is an industry that probably needs subsidies in any way, seeing that there are plenty.
We subsidize plenty of industries that don't need it.
Yeah, but this is an industry that has plenty of profitability when they actually create.
So does oil.
Systems and things like this.
So does oil. Like, so let's keep things in perspective here. Profit is not the motive for subsidies.
Well, that wraps up the week's news here.
Damn, we were able to pound that out in under an hour. I didn't think we were going to make it under 60.
No, yeah, I think after we went pretty long on Joker, we needed to keep it moving. I want to thank you for listening to episode 40.
As always.
Always appreciate you listening. This is episode 40, and if you're enjoying the episode, hey, we will always ask that you like us on whatever podcatcher, whatever you're listening to us on. Just make sure you like, subscribe. If you can, hit that auto download button, as that's what really will drive kind of the continued success, is being able to share metrics and have metrics that demonstrate that people are listening.
And if you're a big podcaster, a fan of podcasts, and you like a wide gamut of podcasts, there's a new website out that we've been playing around with called Podchaser. And you might want to check that out. It's looking like to be a mix of IMDb and kind of Facebook for podcasters. So, if you do have some time, go to Podchaser, check out, your favorite podcast on there. Give us a rating and a review. You can rate the show. You can rate individual episodes. You can, it's really kind of interactive. It's in the beta, form still. So, we've been playing around with it. We claimed our show. We marked ourselves as creators. So if you're really into podcasts, if you listen to more than just one or two, if you're just more of a fan of the Nerd Cantina, then go over there, give your other podcasters some ratings. I think this is going to do well to kind of promote podcasts now that, Podcoin died. Like, I think this is the next evolution in really giving feedback to creators and giving us some access to our fans.
Thanks again. We'll see you again next week.
See you, nerds.